Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about... This is a podcast while driving, covering basic chemistry, quantum mechanics of ortho, meta and para, known as OMP or Old Man Pete. That's my sort of initials that I've earned myself, and want to cover it. And I have dropped a son off in Katoomba, and I'm driving back through fairly dense mist. It's a visibility of about 30 metres, so I'm taking it slowly, and I'm going through a process of podcasting while driving. So this is, in general, you don't get to speak, you get censored very, very quickly. Oh, boo-hoo, boo-hoo. And that's just the fact. And part of the cardiac cognitive rehab is being able to speak on a topic. And there's nothing easier than actually speaking with no one speaking back. And at least it gets that sort of aspect done. I'm sort of travelling rather slowly here. So that's sort of the basic idea, taking these opportunities to do these broad podcasts while driving. So you'll hear the sort of the indicator going from time to time, me checking the traffic, you know, might interrupt things. And I want to cover this. Now, the other aspect of it, obviously, is that this will be a podcast, but I'll give it off to you. So there's a friend of the family, I suppose, visiting the house, and they've said, oh, look, I was helped studying by these acronyms, sort of a fun reworking of acronyms to help me memorise these things, and one was OMP, which is Old Man Pete, and so that was interesting. Then I asked what it was, and... just checking. Oh, coming along here. Sorry, it's a sort of a high angle road movement. And, so there's a high angle. Oh, I sort of recognize this. No, I don't quite recognize where I am. Oh, here we go. You can hear the car going tool, 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 over the road, eating up the road. So that's the basis of it. Now, obviously, I'm not going to embarrass the family by giving you this podcast. It'll be out there, and I'll send it off to you, after you leave. So there's no censorship to go across. Now, here the visibility is only 20 metres, so I'm driving rather carefully. Okay, now we want to look at this ortho, meta, para. And I sort of recognise, I know in quantum mechanics you've got ortho, para for alignment of spin. And we'll talk about that a bit later. And then there's ortho, meta, para. I'd heard it before, but, you know, and attacking orbitals, and I thought, oh, and I looked it up, and I realised, oh, that it's not just orbitals. Oh, she is. So this is really hard because there's such a low visibility here. These are things, and they do refer to either states. You can get ortho, meta, you can trans, cis. These are these terms which talk about location or symmetry. In ortho and para hydrogen, the spin of the nuclei are aligned or counter-aligned in hydrogen. And, you know, that's an interesting thing to go. Ortho, meta and para refer to points on a benzene molecule, not just any old orbital, but a constructed... you can consider any object as with a molecule, which is sort of like an atom with fragmented nucleuses. And so, rather than having an atomic orbitals. They have molecular orbitals, but effectively they are these giant weird atoms. And so benzene, which has a formula of C6H6, is a circle or a hexagon of carbons, or everything's bound to each other. And indeed, the idea of molecularism and orbitals is sort of a modern way of looking at it, rather than looking at a discrete units. And indeed, there's a lot of mechanics, quantum mechanics, to do with it. So the author, Mehta and Parra, referred to locations on a benzene molecule. And it sort of goes into the theme. I'm going to have to stop here, and I'll stop and start very quickly. Oops. Coming up here. I'll be with you in a sec. So I'll continue this in a sec. Now, I'll be doing off for a short while. As I take a break here, but it'll be appear by the magic of podcasting in no time whatsoever. I'm back again after that break, just checking everything's okay. You've heard me just touch the microphone there. I'm going to go into author, Mehta and Parra, and it's associated with the benzene molecule. And one of the things I want to point out is the benzene molecule can actually be thought as a single fragmented atom with really unusual orbitals. And benzene, it's all orbitals really responding and interacting. And they do it in all atoms, except with the benzene, it's a bigger atom, it's more fluid. So the bigger the things are, the more the orbitals change. So your macromolecules would be of billions of molecules across, billions of atoms across, and that would be an atom that has a large molecular orbitals, which are the metallic, what we call the metallic bonds. Benzene is something in terms of atoms, this is a more metallic molecule, because it's a little bit like just the smallest fragment of, it's the smallest piece of graphene with, you know, graphene has to be terminated somehow in the ends, and it's usually terminated with hydrogen. So if you can imagine it, it's the smallest unit of graphene possible. And I'm travelling very slowly here because it's such poor visibility. It's sort of like a very bad 1970s computer game where the actual it renders, but only it renders only a short distance in front, and you look somewhere else and it renders more slowly there. And there's, you know, the graphics here is not all that good. I'll give a general talk on that. And what I'll also talk about is the podcast. So the ability to talk to someone, to a general group. Yep, this is scary as. So I've done 1,500 podcasts, largely on quantum mechanics. So I'm beginning to be able to explain quantum mechanics a little bit better, like a seasoned lecturer. Of course, I don't have students listening back to me, so it allows me to ramble on and get closer to it. But we're talking about this, not just molecules, any old molecules. We're talking about these hexagon-shaped molecules, fragments of the smallest fragment of graphite you can possibly get. And it's so small we can talk about a fixed number of orbitals. So we can talk quantum mechanics here. And here is this beautiful thing. Now, let's do what OMP is. So you're out with your friends. You got six friends. Okay, there's going to be six hydrogens, or six things you can dock in on the place. And that means is that when you sit in your Chinese restaurant with six places, you've got when you're sitting down, you've got actually five other places that your five other friends can sit. Now, if someone sits immediately to the left and right of you, one space away, that's ortho. If they sit two spaces away, that's meta. And if they sit where you want your par or peak to be, the furthest away possible from you, that's para. And now, just sort of describe, because this, you know, how I'm speaking to you, and quantum mechanics is sort of a bit like Voldemort in Harry Potter. It's something that's just not cool to speak about. It's trying to go, yes. There's a bit of... I'm trying a little bit below the speed limit here. That's what cars are. So it's just ping past. They've got greater faith about what's ahead. They probably know what's ahead of them. Okay, so it's the OMP, I think, benzene. It's got to have hexagonal symmetry and basically relative to what's going on. You need... So I'm just demisting the inside of the car here. So it is cold, it's stormy weather here. So OMP does not work for anything but something with a hexagonal symmetry. So it could be silane. This is where instead of carbon it's got silicon on the inside. Or tin or something like that. Anything which has got four in that group four, the carbons, and all forms a hexagonal ring. But so it wouldn't work for, say, a molecule, sort of a three-dimensional clumpy molecule like or sulfate, you know, or a phosphate, where everything's just, it's not planar. This is a table. This is a domestic family molecule where all the people can come in and sit in an orderly fashion around the outside of it. Now, what happens is that once you know the way of quantum mechanics, it is in with you forever, and you'll be sitting there in seemingly a normal situation, and someone will say something, and you'll say, well, that doesn't make sense in terms of quantum mechanics. And if you want to be killed, I kid you not, if you want to be killed and censored, you say, that's not correct. Why? Oh, because quantum mechanics, and you just get shut down, sort of a bit like Grouch in Sesame Street, where you just say, shut up, Grouch, and just slam the tin and gaffer tape it down, or something like that. This is in Sesame Street. I think Grouch, the little Muppet, which lived in a garbage tin. That sort of thing, you get shut down. And I want to actually go through a scenario which will possibly teach about the OMP. So OMP is... you've got to have your first carbon, you've got to have the head of the table to describe it, because OMP is all relative, so it's an impossible thing to go across. Now, let's get back to this situation where the quantum physicist is just minding their own business, listening to a story, and I was listening to the story, and you think, quantum physics can't possibly come into this conversation, but no. So this person was saying, my blah, blah, blah put too much Dettol on my kid and gave him an acid burn. You know, undiluted Dettol. And as they say, Dettol, up inside the screen of your head comes the Dettol molecule. And it's not a strong acid. It's not something that you could put Dettol in your car battery and do something, or you couldn't etch some metal, or you couldn't plunge some metal into Dettol and get hydrogen coming off. It's not even a weak acid. And looking at the quantum mechanics of it, you say, far out there, there's things pushing electrons into that into the table of Dettol, that benzene ring. And if the electrons are pushed in, it means that if there's a hydrogen hanging around, it will tend to stick with it, and it'll tend to be base. So, are you sure that it was a strong acid? And, yeah, strong acid! And I said, oh, I just don't think it can be. I think it has to be a base. Just thinking about the molecule, and of course, if you put that in a domestic situation, and people aren't quantum physicists, and they've got a story that they've built up that this person has spilt acid on the child, they are just, that's it. That's the end of it. And so you go off and you say, oh, well, possibly Dettol is probably quite a good quantum molecule to discuss. And it's an OMP molecule. And not that I've thought of OMP. I tend to talk about 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6 going around because it's just a little bit better to do that because you go through it. But OMP is ortho meta para is the way to go. Now, you had an idea that it's a molecule where the orbital at the top is up for grabs and it's a delocalized pi orbitals. In a sense that the hydrogens have been ripped away, leaving the electrons, excess electrons which are sitting above and below the molecule. So it's like your table and there's sort of a two lazy Susans of food going into it, and basically the lazy Susan can swing around and bring electrons back and forth. The orbitals are moving. Now, dare I say, I will try at some stage talk about orbitals and stuff like that. Now, electrons and Harry Potter are very similar in terms of ghosts. So, how ghosts, you put your hand right through and there's no surface of a ghost? Spooky. Well, that's electrons. Electrons have no surfaces and they can sit through each other. So, basically, if a ghost has got no surface and the next ghost sits at a position at a table, the next ghost can go around and sit right through it, on top of it. So they don't have surfaces, they can move through each other. That's all I have to say. And there's ways surfaces can appear, these ghosts can appear, tell you there. They can emit, absorb light. So that's a little tour of it here. But let's talk about the Dettol molecule as we go across. Now, the head of the table here is, so Dettol, just in your mind, and I'll go OMP. At the prime thing, this is the head of the table, is chlorine, and at the meta position, so at the ortho positions, either side of the chlorine are methyl groups, which is CH3. So the carbon's sitting in, and that's drawn as a single line, because what we do is that we just indicate a carbon-carbon bond by a line. We don't draw the C, because we always know at the end of the line is a C, and we don't draw hydrogen bonds. So when we're drawing this, we just draw a CL and a bond down into a hexagon, and the hexagon will draw as a circle to indicate orbitals around. First year chemistry, this is mad, actually, trying to get this across. Then, for the meta positions, we're going to have methyl groups, and that will be just a line up. And then at that's the ortho position. At the meta position, we're going to say meta people didn't turn up. Bloody hell! We have more for us to eat. And then finally, at the para position, the furthest position, we have the chemically active thing, which is an OH group. So that's a line with an OH on it. That gives you across what's going. And now let's try and talk about Dettol. So what I'm trying to say is that discussion of this is so much richer if you have a social situation, someone's in and you go, oh, Dettol. I think it's basic. Just let me go away and check my orbitals and stuff like that. Because you can imagine in a social situation, this is the most insane, it's like a declaration of war, sort of like going into, after World War II's over, saying something else, you know, oh, I really hope the Third Reich can come back, or something like that. It's just sort of like, oh, insane, insanely inflammatory to question people's, is Dettol acidic? Now, there's a couple of things that you could say. Well, you know, if it is a strong acid, why are we putting it on people's skin? Or, a whole heap of things. But nonetheless, Dettol is chemically active. And it is something which is really interesting. It absolutely wreaks havoc with bacterial walls. So bacterial walls are semi-rigid, and they're chitin. This is a sort of a cellulose polymer, but it's got a sort of protein-esque addition hanging off it. So it's like a sugar and a protein coming off called chitin. So that's the actual structure of the outside of mushrooms, and insects use this stuff. This is the plastic stuff. And so Dettol, for some reason, absolutely kills cane toads. I don't understand. So if you've got a cane toad problem, you can just go around with a squirt bottle of Dettol and spray it on. Yeah, this is interesting stuff. And Dettol is a molecule which is reactive, absolutely toxic to bacteria, and basically leaves humans alone, leaves anything, any, say if you've been eaten up by a fairly sophisticated high-level bug, Dettol's, it's going to laugh it off because it doesn't. But bacteria is really good because it dissolves the outside wall, and this is why Dettol is sort of like the primary, by the World Health Organization, is one of the most essential elements known to mankind. Yet, it's known to quantum physicists as a particular way it operates, but to the rest of the population, it's a powerful acid because acid. It's just so insane. You instantly have this view of what Dettol is. It's the chlorine, methyl, gap, and OH. Now, the interesting thing is the OH, it's Dettol's not a completely inert object. So, if you can imagine, if I had to think of something which is possibly inert, now, osmium smells. Osmium means smells yucky. All right. So, you're smelling like osmium today, or is it tellurium? There's various things which are noted as the stinky elements. But something really inert, platinum. So, I've got a gold. Gold is pretty inert. It's unreactive. I've got an infection. I know what I do. I'll put a lump of gold on it. And what will happen is that you'll die, and the infection will take away, and saying, well, someone's put a lump of gold. The difference here, of course, is Dettol is actually on the cusp. It's inert to eukaryotic cells, but it is absolutely the worst thing that bacteria have ever known, because what happens is that it interacts with the wall of the bacteria, which is this chitin polymer, which is the outer coating of insects. So I wonder if Dettol would be a good insecticide. I myself know it's a good toadicide, stuff like that, and that's how it works. Now, the important thing is that in its combination, it is biologically active. It's biologically active and actually destroys bacteria. So it is basically insecticide. But let's look at the pi. It's called pi orbitals. Carbon is one of the mistrust, a single. So this is like you're doing carbon ring chemistry, so, and Dettol's important. TNT is another one. Tri nitro toluene. So let's just do TNT really quickly. It's another version of Dettol, but a lot more explosive. If you wanted to hold someone up and say, "I'm holding up this bank," it's much more important to hold up a stick of TNT rather than a bottle of Dettol. Because if you now, of course, the main thing is that if it was a bacteria bank, they'd go, "Oh, well, this is terrorism." However, TNT is very similar. So, in your central position is a methyl group, which is a methyl, and this is a I forgot what the name of them. It's a CH3. I've got this thing on the tip of my head talking about, and then at the ortho positions are nitrogen, and at the para position there is toluene, and at the para position you have a nitrogen. Now, nitrogen is rather powerful because it's actually a nitro group, which is NO2. You're bringing an awful lot of oxygens really close to carbon, and the oxygen would love to eat the carbon. Now, so this is why it goes across. You start going, oh no! And of course, what happens is you're bringing these table even cannibals to your table. I've invited a whole series of cannibals to dinner, and they hate each other. And so I've really forced them in, and you can force them in by starving them of oxygen, of water. So you get nitric acid, and you get this orlic acid, which is the most sulfuric, strongest acid possible. It is so strong, it forms thick oil, and this thick oil has had all the water driven off, heat and driven off, and so you stick your toluene, which is it's sort of like the real wedding ring. It's the smallest wedding ring possible. That is a little, cute little ring. Oh, that's a nice ring. And on top of it is diamond. Well, it's the smallest diamond possible. It's a single carbon on top. And on top of that is festooned this, for your appreciation, three hydrogens at the top. And so it's like this top. It's a bit like a whiskey. A nipping flask, because that top flask can rotate. You can never take it off, but you can have at least play with the top, and like you can fidget spin it, the top of that coming in. And so what you have is you have something which is moderately explosive, which is nitro toluene, which has got the para group. And then once you collect that, together, and then you put in an even stronger sulfuric acid, and you make dinitro toluene. You can see where this is going. That's moderately explosive. I wouldn't take it as an antacid. It would just create a real big thing. And toluene, for instance, is carcinogenic. So that's once I'm told something's carcinogenic, I just can't touch it because I don't know how much and stuff like that. But chemists don't seem to worry about that. So you've got trinitro toluene, which is where the German factories making the TNT, whatever it is, they put a hell of a lot of energy into getting the water out of sulfuric acid. So they get sulfuric acid and they really, really process it. And then the sulfuric acid really wants water. And so it actually uses a mixture of toluene and nitric acid to rip a hydrogen off the nitric acid. and an OH of the nitric acid. So the amazing thing is that in this case, the nitric acid is a base, because the sulfuric acid is so much more powerful. So you put all this energy in, and so when you stick a TNT, that is not just that, oh, I mix these things together and boom, you put a dynamite factory or a TNT factory uses a hell of a lot of energy, because it's using all the energy to take the water out of the sulfuric acid. Now, there's still, yes, you are putting a lot of energy in. You use a lot of energy to make the nitrate fertilizer and stuff like the nitrates, the Haber process and all that type of stuff. And so heaps and heaps of energy. And so when your stick of TNT goes in, it costs a lot of money, because that, so many megajoules of energy, which is given off in a fraction of a second, you can't just say, look, I can pick up some TNT really cheap and then put it in a generator, like throw TNT into a coal fire power station because it's so cheap. You have to actually pay for the energy at some stage to get across. And this is again looking at it. Now, the orbitals for carbon, this is the entire thing, is that there's nothing, no real, the orbitals that we select are in your face because they're easy to teach. So I don't know, so we get away from this folk belief that, say, Detol is acidic, and start to do some more quantum physics and go into it. But then there is this belief that atoms should be a particular shape, because that's the way I was first taught them. It's sort of like we make this big advance of getting away from folk belief of non-quantum physics, and then I go into it. So the quantum physics, the Detol is, and benzene and graphene is oozing with quantum physics. Now, the important thing is that there is these non-hybridized orbitals, like pure orbitals and hybridized orbitals. They're only hybridized because they're hybridized according to the teaching chart, if that makes sense. So the teaching chart says there's two types of orbitals called S and P. Now, what does S stand for? Well, what does P stand for? What does D stand for? And there's a fourth type of orbital, the F. What do they stand for? What does that letter stand for? You know? Well, the S stands for sharp, ouch. P is for principle. And D is for diffuse, and F is fine. But when you actually, when you think of those things, that there's personalities in those words, and there is indeed personalities in the spectra. So if you look at the spectra of the electrons coming off into these orbitals, these produce really distinct gutsy or fine or sharp spectral lines, and they've just said, oh, look, that's that type of atom, that's got that type of orbital. We'll call that orbital, that's a sharpie, ouch. And that's principal, you know, big principal orbital here. Oh, and then diffuse, hello, I'm rather artistic and fine, is sort of very sort of playing classical music on the harpsichord. It's sort of very fine to get across. Now, what happens is that the orbitals, they're of individual atoms, and they're of the sort of like the individual counting system. Like when you first learn to count blocks, there's 1, 2, and 3, and someone goes along, oh look, there's 3/4. What? 3/4? What? I have to add these two things together to it. And just trying to think of some other examples, and eventually people go on, oh, and you just can't make up this pi and stuff like that. They're all still numbers, and it's the way that you go through it. And so we say that something's hybridized. It's hybridized from our classical way of thinking. So if you can imagine, the classical orbital is in the benzene. Benzene has to really bend itself to make itself flat. And so there's SP2 orbitals, which are these flat flower orbitals, three clover orbitals. That's a way to speak of them. They form into a flat clover. So a flat clover with an orbital above and below, and those orbitals above and below can become delocalized. You know, what does delocalized mean? Well, as you add in the orbits, you consider the nucleus as six nucleuses together. The nucleus is can you imagine if you could slice up the nucleus and break it up into six, it would break it. So it really is sort of, it's on the twilight zone, the twilight zone between atoms and big molecules. This is this twilight zone to go in. And so this would obviously make a great place to start chemistry if you did enough background to it. And so they're getting you to memorize these things like OMP, and but there are other things to go across it. Now, these pi orbitals, if you would like, is sort of like this. You can imagine it as a lazy Susan of electrons. So, you know, pass me the source, and a lazy Susan moves around. Now, one of the things that, you know, we're getting into Springwood here, so I'm going to run up. One of the things is that I was at ANU, right, and I knew, and it didn't worry me that the people, the top people there, the people at physical chemistry knew, but a lot of the other chemists didn't know about quantum physics. How could that possibly be? But that is true. And I had a very good friend, Ian Ross, Professor Ian Ross, and we would talk, and it would become apparent that Ian was getting on and he was just not in the mood for quantum chemistry, and we were chatting about other things. And so, you know, a long time came to pass, and eventually he died, and I went to his funeral and met up with basically all the top chemists in Australia from all the different universities. Came across, he was a very famous chemist, and I said, all right, you know, had the your Sanger and the stuff like that at the wake, and I said, okay, well, I think it's about time that we start doing quantum physics. And people, these retired professors said, oh no, there is a way of doing it without quantum. And you go, oh my god. Now, for someone who isn't sort of the Joan of Arc of quantum physics deciding I'm going to go through, there's a mission, we've got to lead Australia into the quantum realm, it was just, oh well, I was always wondering what life is going to be like if you really understood stuff. That's what it is. Like, you get to really understand something. It sort of reminds me of these things where you've got great portent of doing something because there's a slogan: come understand quantum physics, it'll show you the world. And then what they don't tell you is, well, you'll be forever isolated from people because no one else will understand it. There was a case where I was at a student celebrating the end of volunteer years, and went to an all-you-can-eat Turkish restaurant in Brunswick in Melbourne. And this is great because we were students, we were very hungry, and that was the way that we could set our budget thing. We had so much money, we found an all-you-can-eat for so much money of Turkish food. That's really great. And so we just absolutely picked ourselves up, and then they said, oh well, what's going on, there's no more food. And we said, and it wasn't, so we ate a huge amount of food, we ate pretty much a standard amount of food, and they said, yeah, it is all you can eat, because after we've run out of food, there's nothing more you can eat. And so this is sort of a bit like, this is great understanding quantum physics, but it means that you're on the outside of it. Now, what I want to say is that these pi electrons, so you've got a different, you can, if you like, it's sort of like selecting a car. It can have all these different features in it. So you can select carbon with sp3, which is like the, it's a, so sp3 is the s and the p orbitals are hybridized together. So your p orbitals divided up, your s orbitals divided up into three and divvied around the place. How can that be? Well, that is sort of like number counting systems. It's sort of, I think it's sort of like how digital data and handwritten data, it's all the same. They're different ways of counting in the same way. Now, in counting, we tend to count things. In quantum physics, you count the number of possible solutions. So your first solution, second solution, third solution. And so the solution to this is a bit of solution two and three. It's sort of like ordering from a Chinese restaurant. I'll have a bit of four, a bit of seven, a number 64 without the sauce on it. And it's your dish that comes out, and they can make the dish. And so it's a bit like orbitals are them. So what this means is that your table of carbon is, you've got this Lazy Susan, or if you imagine this big sort of sauce bag of sauce, and you can actually drag the sauce over to you, or you can push it away. Now, if you push the sauce away, if you've got some and you push it away, you will create this sauce. You can imagine the pilot on the surface. You can push it away, and it will present itself to say, who else wants to go here? And so these little, if you can imagine little protons or things as hungry puppy dogs, you put out the electron source, squish it out from one end of the table. So what happens is that you've got sort of basically a normal country Australian from Wagga, and they go out there and they sit at the table and they go, sure, I love it. And you can imagine these upper class friends, which are the methyl group, if they're there, and they say, you don't want any of it. And so what it does is it, the end result is it sort of half and half, it pushes, I'm getting home in time to see my son, which is a really important thing to do. So I think I'm suddenly in Bluxland. So there you go. So they're the methyl groups there. The methyl groups are in the, I think that's a word. Methyl groups are at your O groups. The beta isn't there because it's just, it gets actually rather crowded to get things into a table. And then the para group has got the oxygen. And oxygen normally is sort of like, I don't know. I can't make up my mind. Do I want a hydrogen or don't I? Do I want this hydrogen or that hydrogen? And this makes your hydrogen bomb. Do I want this hydrogen? Oh, I'll take this one. My hands are full. Oh, here you have this hydrogen over here. And you can imagine these molecules, which are water molecules, they can't make up their mind. And they're always going, I've got a hydrogen. Oh, here you have it. Have it. Oh, thank you very much. Oh, I've lost my other hydrogen. And what's happening is that they're all passing hydrogens around like it's mad. So everyone's got this view, school view of that water molecules is this very majestic thing. Every water molecule is like mummy oxygen and two baby hydrogens on it. No, it's not like this. It's not like that at all. So if you have a water molecule and I put it into the Pacific Ocean, the kids will get thrown away. I say, oh, I like that kid. And it grabs another one, pops out. And the hydrogen just darts through the water at high speed. It's the most amazing thing to see. So I can put a drop of deuterium in some water, and that deuterium is, you know, that deuterated water, that is HDO, no, D2O rather than H2O, and that will instantly just completely fall apart. The deuterium will start to swap and it will be dissipated into HDO, not HBO and stuff like that. So what's happening is, so the imaginative thing is that a acid is something which is something which will be an acid is electron poor, so it pulls its electron away and it goes, and it's a little puppy dog of hydrogen sitting there going, "Mom, I've lost it." And it's almost, if you imagine a really fluffy chihuahua and you know, this really skin sort of insect of a dog in the inside, and what happens is that you've got something which really loves the fur, it just shaves it off, and this little chihuahua sort of starts to run around the place because now it's all skinny, hasn't got the fur with it, because this monster loves fur, and that would be an acid. But what's happening is that the methyl groups at the top of your Dettol are sort of like these upper-class people who are on diets, you know, vegans and stuff like that, and they hate it, and they just push away the fur or the sauce or the fluid or the electrons and push them away. They're on the oxygen, and the oxygen has just got so much fur coming out of it. This little chihuahua, which has been shaved, goes, you know, and it stays there. And so what happens is that Dettol is mildly alkaline. In fact, it's got the same alkalinity as your skin. I don't know whether your skin is slightly alkaline. I've got to find what the story is there. It's... to you, it's sort of like Dove. Dove and Dettol are pretty much probably the same thing. To you're probably too young to know. Keme is my beauty product. I wonder if I'm going to be home in time to pick up my my daughter. Okay, so that's the overall story. It's a way of life. Quantum mechanics is a way of life. It is sort of like one of those reality TV shows, sort of with the all-saws, these people who just see houses and they can renovate it. It's sort of like that, except it's like your own personal reality show that you're trapped in. And so you see a molecule and you... It's sort of a molecule. It's like a soap opera going on with quantum mechanics. It's a real soap opera, curious and stuff like that. And then it's sort of like seeing molecules like Dettol's is really perhaps like looking at Looney Tunes cartoons. It's really great. It's Daffy Duck and Porky Pig and all that type of stuff goes along. But a full-on organic molecule is like full CGI, thousands of things are going. It's like looking at CGI Lord of the Rings. It's sort of like great. Now, what's happening is that in terms of computer simulations and stuff like that, people are still going off, "Oh, did you see the special effects in Ghostbusters? Whoa, wasn't that cool? Oh, yes, they superimposed the computer screen. I was frightened." And so, as you can sort of imagine, it's a little bit boring to look. The people are sure nice, but the people who are in classical physics, classical mechanics, they're great, but they are hard work to go along, and it's partly because they will start rooping into quite fun and reasonable activities. Okay, well, I'll just go now and see if it's time. So thanks a lot for listening, and I'm back.
podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.